Do people actually watch hockey? Just how fraudulent is Jalen Hurts? Is Davis Mills that guy? Is Christmas an NFL or NBA holiday? At what point in November does it become acceptable to decorate for Christmas? Is it worth driving 3 hours away on a Thursday night to see Billie Eilish? If you want answers to these burning questions and many, many more, you've come to the right place. So let's roll the music and talk some ball.
This is K-True on 96.1 KTRU LP Houston and streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org. Back to you, Ian.
Good morning, Houston. I'm Ian Kleppinger, and welcome back to Against the Grain on K-True 96.1 FM, the Rice University student-run radio show, where we break down everything going on in the world of Rice athletics and the broader sports scene from across the city of Houston. You can listen to us every Saturday bright and early at 7 a.m. right here on K-True 96.1 FM, or stream all of our episodes anytime on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you get podcasts. To stay in the loop, make sure and follow us on Instagram. We will be kicking off our K-True Sports Hour with Around the Hedges. Here at Rice University, it is common to say that the greater city of Houston is beyond the hedges. So to start off each episode of Against the Grain, we go around the hedges for a quick review of the biggest sports moments of the past week from both Rice and the city of Houston. We're going to start off by giving even more flowers to our beloved Rice women's soccer team, who had a heartbreaking overtime loss 1-0 to the UTSA Roadrunners in the AAC Tournament Championship, which effectively ends their 2025 season, as American athletic teams seldom get at-large bids in the national NCAA tournament. Dayo Tennyson, Lily Roycher, Eileen Albers, and Jaden Jaeger were all named to the all-tournament team. The Owl soccer team finishes with a 10-4-6 record and obviously a conference tournament runner-up on their resume. So great stuff from the Owls, even if they ultimately came short of their goal. Let's move over to professional sports for a second. The Houston Rockets, who we have talked about extensively, have been on a tear since our last episode. They've won both their games. They beat the Bucks on the road 122-115, and then beat the Wizards at home 135-112. KD had 31 in Milwaukee as he emerges as the primary scoring option the Rockets needed him to be, especially with the absence of Fred VanVleet. Tari Eason had 20 off the bench in just 21 minutes versus the Wizards. That's Garrett's GOAT, in case you weren't with us last year. The Rockets moved to 7-3 on the year, and their next game after the episode airs is home versus the Magic at 6 p.m. on Sunday, but they have a primetime matchup in Cleveland against the Cavaliers on ESPN at 6 p.m. on Wednesday the 19th, so if you're a Hoops fan, you don't want to miss that. The Rice volleyball team has been on an absolute tear. They're on a 13-game win streak following senior night with 2 games left in the regular season. We will give you more of an update on them with an in-depth segment later in our show, so stay tuned if you want to hear about Rice volleyball. Rice football beat UAB at home last Saturday 24-17 to improve to 5-5 on the season and maintain a chance at bowl eligibility. Quarterback Chase Jenkins threw for 2 touchdowns for the first time in his career while adding 56 yards on the ground. Q Jack ran for 81 yards on 22 carries, and Andrew Awe and Jack Kane each had 7 tackles to lead the Rice defense, including 2 for a loss from Andrew. Peyton Stevenson blocked a second quarter punt, which, fun fact, is his second career blocked punt, as he was the last Rice Owl to block a punt against the Mustangs of SMU back on November 4th, 2023. So very intriguing season so far from Scott Abel's Rice Owls. We are going to stay on the college football theme and kind of look at the broader national picture and maybe give you a little more info on Rice. So let's take it away. I don't know who I'm supposed to kick it to.
Thank you, Ian. We are heading straight into week 12 of college football previews, and we got loads to talk about. Let's start with those people who should not be in the conversation. Let's get it with some playoff frauds. So I'm going to pass it up to everyone. Who do we think should not be in the college football playoffs?
Can we start with the Texas Longhorns? They're number 10 in the CFP here. 7-2. They have 1 win over Vandy. Okay, Vandy is like decent this year, but nothing crazy. They went to overtime against Kentucky and Mississippi State. Like, Arch is so overrated. Can we just accept that he's not good and stop giving him hype?
I don't know. I think Arch is starting to develop into a pretty good quarterback. But if we want to talk about frauds, I think we got to bring up the BYU Cougars, I believe. They got manhandled by Texas Tech last week. In the Big 12 division, there's a bunch of good teams, but I think BYU is not one of the standouts, especially not top 12 in the country.
Yeah, they'll probably end up playing Tech in the Big 12 championship again, and I think they're going to get killed again. Their offense just got completely shut down.
I mean, that's what happens when you have a freshman quarterback in a very dangerous road game, you know. But, all right, moving on to the ACC. Everyone might have forgotten who's in the ACC when you're looking at it this year. So do we believe the ACC should even have a bid this year? If
Georgia
so, who?
Georgia Tech.
I think they're the team that lost to NC State?
Yes. That's their one loss of the year. Okay, everybody has a little mistake here and there. They get to play Georgia and Pitt in the last two games of the season. I think those will be deciding factors. Haynes King, I think he's really good, a really good quarterback, super mobile. He's done some good for me before, so hopefully they can sneak into the CFP. I'd like to see them kind of get in the conversation there.
Would you say that if Georgia Tech let's say hypothetically they don't win out, do you think they could still make the playoffs?
They absolutely have to beat Pitt, and they need at least a close, productive game with Georgia. But otherwise, I don't think they've got it.
Is there any team in the ACC that you think might make a certain run for it? Miami.
I think if we're looking at it, other than Georgia Tech, I think the one team to look at is, as he mentioned, Pitt, because ever since they got that new freshman quarterback, Mason Henschel, they've been like really good. They've been putting up a ton of points recently, and then they still have opportunities against Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, and Miami, where even if you lose one of those, that's not that bad. And if you can win two of them, that just really solidifies their resume for a potential playoff push.
Let's shift it over to Notre Dame. Notre Dame has their last most difficult game left, in a sense, against Pitt, at Pitt.
Frauds.
So you think they're frauds?
Notre Dame's a fraud. Yeah, this Pitt game is an absolute trap game. College game day is going to be there. It's in Pittsburgh or wherever they play. I'm assuming it's Pittsburgh, but I think Notre Dame is going to be a trap game for sure.
Oh, no, I'm not completely sold on Pitt. I think Notre Dame has a track record. That coach over there has done a really good job. Just brought them to the Natty. Not a whole lot of turnaround or turnover from last year, but I think it's really Notre Dame's game to lose.
Why are they ninth in the playoff? Why are they ninth in the playoff?
Yeah, realistically, Notre Dame has played like three good teams this
exactly.
year, and they lost to two of them. So it's kind of, I don't know. I think Notre Dame often gets the benefit of the doubt, and maybe they're getting it this year. But if they do beat Pitt, I think they might deserve to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, I can agree.
Now let's move on to sleeper teams. And when I mean sleeper, I mean like anything. Like I'm going to keep it open to the table to win it all, to make the playoffs, to make a run for the conference championship, etc.
I like Tech. They looked really good against BYU. They're obviously going to be in the Big 12 conference championship, which isn't a big deal because it's the Big 12. But I think I'd like to see them make a real good run in the playoff for sure.
Yeah. So you have them taking it all?
Not necessarily, but I hope that they go far. I hope they go at least past the first round. I think that's a given.
Yeah, honestly, I was gonna say the same thing because if you look at their games this year, other than their one loss to Arizona State, they've destroyed everyone. They blew out BYU, which maybe that win isn't as impressive as you would have thought, but they were ranked 7 at the time. They blew out Utah on the road. I think Utah is a very good team, probably the second best team in the Big 12. So even though they're in a conference where it's not the Big 10 or the SEC, so it's not that difficult, I think that's still like a real championship contender out of the Big 12 this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think Tech looks really good, but for a bit of a sneakier team, not necessarily for the CFP, but just in general, I love University of North Texas Mean Green, led by Drew Mestemaker. They had a bad loss to USF a few weeks back, but I mean, they're 8-1. If they went out against, I believe they're playing Temple, Rice, and one other team in the next three games, they have a real shot to go 11-1 and win the AAC. I think they look really good. The coach has done a really good job down there.
Is that good enough for a bid into the playoffs?
Not 100% sure about that, but I just think they can definitely
win the
conference.
That would be very cool. I live about 20 minutes west of UNT, so it would be pretty cool for the city.
And Mestemaker's got a great story as well. He's a guy that's pretty easy to root for.
Yeah, and like the Group of Five is going to get one bid this year with the way the playoff is structured. And I think you're looking at the winner of the AAC, which is going to be North Texas or USF, in my opinion. So if North Texas can get to that game and win it, I think they're going to be in the playoff. And we can see what they can do there against whoever they play.
Also, OU's sitting still in the top 12. And they're going to make a run. but it's a little under the radar, a little sneaky. Mateer's healthy again. They play at Bama, I think in Alabama this this Saturday. So I think that'll be a deciding game for their campaign this year. But a little sneaky there.
I mean, they have to win it.
They have to beat Alabama. Yeah, if
that's going to be a huge test for them. I think Alabama, after their week one loss against FSU, has looked really, really good. Ty Simpson is a Heisman candidate. He's my pick for the Heisman, honestly, even over Mendoza. Saying maybe. I think she'd get the nod, but I really like Ty Simpson.
Yeah, great transition right there. Let's talk about Heisman odds now. So for reference, currently the favorite to win it is Fernando Mendoza at plus 130, and then we go to Julian Sand just plus 170, Marcel Reed plus 700, and then Ty Simpson at plus 800. What do we think about these candidates? Do you think someone else should be included? Who do you think should take it all?
I keep seeing Mendoza and Sand flip-flopping in betting odds. Mendoza got a lot of hype this past weekend for this game-winning drive against Penn State. They keep calling it a Heisman moment. Why were we in a one-score game against Penn State?
I agree.
I think Indiana is also super fraudulent. They're second in the playoffs. They're ranked second. It's pretty ridiculous. I think that should not have been any kind of game. Drew Auer's out. Their coach is out. It was pretty ridiculous, and he's getting all this hype for Heisman. I don't think he's got it, especially when it comes to playoff time. I think they're going to get fleeced.
Yeah, and I think the supporting cast around Marcel Reed is really carrying him. I mean, I was at their game against Auburn a few weeks back, and he did not look super sharp. He threw a really costly interception on a wide receiver screen pass that went 70 yards and set up Auburn for their only touchdown. Texas A&M's defense looked incredible that game, and I think a lot of their team success can be attributed to that as opposed to Marcel Reed. I really like I said, either Sayan or Ty Simpson, but we'll see. OSU's been looking really, really good this year. I think they're the clear favorites to win it all, and if that does happen, I think it's Sayan's to lose.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I also have Sayan as my pick right now. He has an 81% completion percentage, which is just insane, and this year we aren't really seeing like the type of season that Gentry or Travis Hunter had last year. There's no like runaway Heisman candidate, so I think that kind of leaves it open for what like a really good quarterback performance on the best team like that can win the Heisman this year.
Now moving on to our next segment, I have some sort of current ranking snubs. So teams that should be mad for incorrect rankings or fraudulent rankings. So just to play like a mini game, you guys are getting a little sweet treat today. Two games in one. We're going to be playing a blind resume. So I will give you two teams and you will have to guess which one is Team A and Team B. So Team A, number 7 strength of record, number 24 strength of schedule, 2 wins against SP plus top 4 teams by an average of 4 points, 1 loss to a top 10 team by 10 at home. Now we have Team B, number 8 strength of record, number 28 strength of schedule, 3 wins to SP plus top 40 teams by an average of 8 points, 1 loss to a top 10 team by 22 on the road.
Okay, I think Team B is BYU. Is that right?
You are correct.
Yeah, because they got destroyed by Tech, and then.
Yeah, so just give me Team A.
I agree with that.
We really think that the. Let me. Sorry. Team A was Oregon. So, do we think it's fair to say Oregon is that much better than BYU in terms of where they're ranked?
Oregon was actually one of my frauds for the fraud section that we didn't get to, but I do want to talk about them. They have like no good win. I mean, they just beat Iowa on the road, and I think Iowa's underrated, but like then again, it's Iowa. I mean, Iowa's kind of the same 9-3, 8-4 team every year, and they lost their big game against Indiana. They won the big game against Penn State, but now we know that's like not that impressive of a win. But Oregon just hasn't looked impressive against Wisconsin, who's terrible, against Iowa, against Penn State. And they just had a really easy schedule, especially for a Big Ten team this year, and they're kind of getting the benefit of doubt based on how well they did last year. But I think they can really get exposed against maybe a Washington on the road or USC.
I agree. Now for another blind resume that we have, Team A. SP plus number 12, best win versus committee's number 18 team. Losses to SP number 6 and 23 by a combined 12 points. 17.8 points per game average margin of victory versus FBS opponents who are combined 38 and 29 in other FBS games. Now we have Team B. SP plus number 14, best win versus committee's number 11 team, losses to SP plus numbers 1 and 48 by a combined 15 points. 13.1 points per game average margin of victory versus FBS opponents who are combined 33 and 34 in other FBS games.
That's a lot to process.
Is
it's like listening to a math equation.
Utah? Are those teams Utah?
The first one or the second? Team A or Team B? Are you saying?
Team B.
Team B is not Utah. Okay, well, Team B is currently ranked higher than Team A.
Well, Team B lost to number one, so number one is probably Ohio State, right?
Yes, number one is Ohio State.
Oh, is it UT?
Yes, Team okay. B is UT. Who do we think is Team A?
Well, just give me Team A again.
Team A is actually the Trojans. USC Trojans.
Oh my gosh, this is a trap.
Well, so they're actually, the Trojans are ranked, I believe it's 6 spots behind.
USC is number 17, Texas is number 10.
7 spots behind. Do we think that's a fair ranking for the Trojans and for Texas? Because you were saying earlier, UT is actually fraud.
Well,
so
here's
maybe
the difference. I still think UT's a fraud, but they play in the SEC. What is USC doing this year?
USC still has a game against Iowa and Oregon. So
USC's in the Big Ten, no?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, they're still also in a great conference. I mean, Texas, I can see why there's all these fraud claims. Arch did not look very good in his first few games. Even against Oklahoma, which was a pretty big win for them, he didn't look super good until the very end of the game. But I think this team just has a lot of talent on their roster. Their coach, he's been doing it for how many years now? 2 or 3 on Texas? Where do you come
Sarks?
From?
Sarks? Yeah. Yeah. 3 or 4 years, I think.
Okay. But, yeah, I think Texas is honestly primed to claw back in the rankings a little bit. I think they're going to solidify their spot in the college football playoff. It's a huge week for them against Georgia. So we'll see if they pull off the upset. But I don't think you can really write them out yet.
Now moving on to that, let's move on to some player shout-outs. Do we have any player shout-outs for this past week or for this upcoming week?
I watched a lot of the Tech BYU game. Jacob Rodriguez, long-shot Heisman candidate. His coach really, really likes him. He had 14 tackles, an interception, and a fumble recovery against BYU. And his totals are 7 forced fumbles, 91 tackles, 9.5 stops for loss, 3 interceptions, and 2 fumble recoveries on the season through week 11.
Yeah, he's going to get his second straight 100-tackle season. He, I think, should be a little bit in the Heisman conversation. Not to win it, but I think he deserves some love. I agree.
That's a valid take. Do we have anything for you?
I mean, this is kind of a generic player shout-out because Ty Simpson is in the Heisman conversation, and some people think he should win it. I don't think he's going to win it, but last week against – they played LSU last week. Is that right? Alabama? They played a ranked team last
LSU.
Week. And he went 21 for 35, 277 yards, 1 touchdown, no interceptions, which is just like microcosm of the season in a way because he already has 2,500 yards. He has 21 touchdowns in 1 pick, which is basically just like, I don't want to call him a game manager, but that's like perfect way to manage a game when you have a team as talented as Alabama.
My personal player shout out is Makai Lemon, fellow USC Trojan. 11 receptions, 161 yards. One touchdown, one receiving touchdown, one rushing touchdown against Northwestern. USC needs more big performances out of him. I expect for him to make a big impact in these weeks coming forward, especially Iowa at home and then Oregon away. Now, to conclude, let's get a final natty pick from each of y'all.
I'll lead it off with OSU. It's the obvious pick, but I think it's the correct pick. Number 2, Indiana, barely held on against a weak Penn State team. Number 3, Texas A&M has had some questionable wins, notably against Auburn and some other teams. In a league with a lot of potential fraud picks like Oregon, BYU, Texas, you can just kind of rattle them off. OSU's been extremely dominant, and I think it's really theirs to lose.
Oh, I'll go OSU as well. Sain and Smith, Jeremiah Smith, it's like they have a great supporting cast. I think it's really tough to beat them. I think they'll end up playing hopefully an SEC team in the championship. I think it'll be pretty blockbuster, hopefully.
I was going to pick Ohio State too, but since I don't want to be unanimous, I'll say Texas Tech. Beat Ohio State in the championship.
Like Texas Tech. Wow, I was going to take A&M just to spice it up a little bit, give a little bit of love to a Texas team. But yes. Anyways, Jiminy Crickets, that will be all for today, folks, as we now slide it to myself for the game of the week, which may or may not include different spellings of Jalen. Note, Jalen Smith will not be covered in this segment.
All right, so we got the game. Great intro there by Jacob. We got the game better than Jalen with three participants, Neil, Andrew, and Julian. Very simple rules today. We're just going to name an athlete named Jalen, and then we're going to have a list of athletes in increasingly better order. And when I name an athlete that's better than the Jalen, you guys can tell me to stop. We're going to talk about it a little bit, see if we agree, disagree. And, yeah, let's just get started. So the first athlete is Jalen Waddle. And we have Keon Coleman, Cooper Kupp, Jameson Williams, Rashid Shaheed, Quentin Johnston.
Stop.
What?
Wow.
Okay, keep going, bro.
Look. You take a look at his past history. I mean, I guess
let's
we could talk about it a little bit and get back into
okay,
it.
Okay, okay. He's not even the best receiver on his team, bro.
He's been really good this year,
this
though.
He might be the third best receiver on his team.
He might be the fourth best receiver after Aronde Gadsden, man. What are we doing?
I mean,
he had a good start, but he slowed down.
I mean, what's wrong with him is my question. He's great at catching. He's very quick, you know.
This season,
great at catching has not been
oh, he's a,
I wouldn't
he's a
say that very quick either. He's more of like a jump ball threat of a receiver, I think. And
he's
he has
like
not
a,
had a great history in the NFL up until the start of this season.
I would say he's a Walmart T. Higgins, and I don't even rate T. Higgins that much, to be honest. That's where QJ's at right now. I think that's ludicrous. Okay, let's keep the names going.
All right, let's continue with Marvin Harrison, Tet McMillan, Cortland Sutton.
Yeah, stop. Yeah. Cortland Sutton's definitely better than Jalen Waddle, bro. What are we doing? I don't think Jalen Waddle could be a number one receiver like on an actual like good team.
No.
Like I genuinely don't I don't think he could be.
That's crazy.
He's too limited in what he can do.
No, okay, so I see what you're saying, but Jalen Waddle is playing with a QB who doesn't have a working brain, basically. Like, do you know how hard that is to do, bro? Have you seen some of these passes that Tua is throwing? The fact that Jalen Waddle's getting production with Tua at quarterback is impressive in and of itself. Like, Tyreek Hill was not getting production with... In the last couple... Like, he had a really good first couple years.
Yeah.
In the last couple, he has not really produced. Now, that could be Tyreek Hill for all we know, right? But I think Waddle producing with Tua, I think he's had a really good year, and he's reminded people why he was drafted so early out of Alabama.
If we're talking production, imagine trying to get production in Sean Payton's offense where all the calls are screens or halfback dives.
Yeah, but he's
not getting any favors from the play calling either.
I'm not saying it's not close. I'm just saying I would still take Jalen Waddle because I think Bo Nix is a better quarterback than Tua. And say what you want about Sean Payton, I think right now he's got a better grasp of the offense than Mike McDaniel.
All right, let's keep it moving here. We still have Julian to go, so next player is DK Metcalf, Garrett Wilson.
Okay, stop. Garrett Wilson. Yeah, I think DK is close just because the athleticism is like so freakish. You don't see that in a lot of receivers, who can like move that fast. And you know, he's been okay with the Steelers in his first season with Rodgers, but. Yeah, Garrett Wilson is just a very complete receiver. Shame he's out for the next couple weeks. But, yeah, I would definitely take him over Jalen Waddle.
All right, Jacob, we'll give you your next Jalen.
All right, moving on to Jalen Brunson. All right, the first name we have on this list. I know this might be a difficult choice for y'all, but Cam Carroll.
Okay, okay. Yeah, all right.
Okay, we might make it a little bit tougher with this one. Max Christie.
What are these names, bro?
Tyler Hero.
In the trenches right now.
No. Amen Thompson.
Love, but no.
Ooh.
Trey Young.
No.
Chet.
No.
Pascal Siakam.
No.
Devin Booker.
That's really hard. I think that's really close, I would say.
I'm gonna keep going.
John Morant.
No. Nah, not this year.
LeBron James.
Is that real?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I'd stop at LeBron.
LeBron?
Yeah.
Alrighty. What about you, Neil? Are you?
Yeah.
100% LeBron?
I think even Unc LeBron, like, coming off his groin injury, wherever he's going to be coming back this season, like, he's still, like...
He can just do so much.
Top 10 player in the league.
Yeah. LeBron is, like, LeBron's game is going to, you know, basically when he chooses to retire, like, that'll be it. Like, he'll continue to be a good player as we, as he continues to get older. A little bit of glaze, but still. No, I would take LeBron.
For reference, after LeBron, we still had Jalen Williams, Jalen Brown, Bam Adebayo, Paolo Banchero, and AD.
Kawhi
Leonard.
He's
in order.
Y'all placed LeBron wrong then.
LeBron should have been at the end.
I think y'all should have been all the way at the top, man.
Yeah.
I think y'all overvaluing LeBron.
Like maybe LeBron's better than all of those players.
Like maybe Jaylen Brown.
Career-wise, yes.
No, right
like,
now LeBron is better than everyone else.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, well, we got to account for the injury, okay? Like we got to like
what?
Okay.
Why do we play the okay? All right.
Let's move on to the last Jaylen here. This is the most fun one, in my opinion. We have Jalen Hurts.
Ooh.
So
we've been entertaining this
let's
idea
start
for a
off
few weeks now.
With Quinn Ewers.
Wow.
Davis Mills. We might hear from him
hey
later in this episode.
Hey. Just saying.
Tanner McKee. Tua. Justin Fields. Jacoby Brissett. Geno Smith. Michael Penix. Joe Flacco. Aaron Rodgers. Mac Jones, Bryce Young, CJ Stroud.
Ooh.
Keep going, man.
Yeah. Trevor Lawrence, Bo Nix.
Disrespectful. Give me Bo Nix.
Disrespectful, oh, by the way, to have Trevor Lawrence after CJ Stroud. But okay.
I mean, Bo Nix like was he should have won Offensive Rookie of the Year had it not been for Jaden Daniels. Like Bo Nix genuinely is probably the second best quarterback out of that quarterback class. Like. Maybe behind Drake May.
Are you serious?
Maybe yeah behind Drake May.
Like,
wait, okay, wait. Yeah. Second best quarterback in that. So, Drake May, Caleb Williams,
Caleb
Jane
Williams
Daniels
is a bum. Jaden Daniels is too injury prone.
He's gotten hurt once.
I mean,
no,
he's been out his quad and his arm. And just like, even like when he was healthy this year, he had a big sophomore slump. It was like watching CJ Stroud all over again.
No, and you know I defend CJ for the sophomore slump, but those were different years, man. Jaden Daniels was playing.
Like honestly, Terry McLaurin, his production under like Jaden Daniels' first couple games back, like we expected big things, and
I think he played one
happen
game. Terry McLaurin.
No, Terry's played a few times
he's
this year.
He's
isn't
played a couple of times, and that hasn't happened. I mean, like
okay,
Bo
I
Nix,
many
not
his
not
deep ball. He threw, I think he threw like the farthest deep ball out of any quarterback in like the past like 20 years.
Bo Nix is. Bo Nix is Jalen Hurts without the running ability.
Mm-mm. Are you kidding? Bo Nix is probably like a better Jalen
no
Hurts. Yeah.
No. I'm
yeah
sorry. No.
Like every attribute that Jalen Hurts has, Bo Nix does better.
Okay. No.
I don't know about that, but we'll keep going. We still have two more people to stop. Let's go with Caleb Williams.
No. Hold on a minute, man. He's been playing well.
Are we
right
that
now?
Jalen
right now?
Jalen Hurts is a Super Bowl champion.
Are we going right now?
We're going just recently in general. Like,
okay, no, I would go Jalen Hurts still then.
Okay. Then we have Daniel Jones.
Ain't no way.
Okay.
Jordan Love.
No.
Jaden Daniels.
Ooh, my goodness. Mm. If this was asked at the beginning of this
healthy
year.
Healthy Jaden Daniels.
Yes, healthy Jaden
Daniels. Okay, yeah, easy. I'd take Jaden Daniels over Jalen Hurts. I just think he's more dynamic as a passer than Jalen Hurts. Like, Jalen Hurts has the clutch gene, but I don't know. I think with how impressive his rookie year was, I think Jaden Daniels has the mobility that Jalen Hurts has, if not better. And then he can, yeah, as I said, just more dynamic as a passer. He gives you a bit more options there.
Andrew, you still stuck?
Yeah, let me hear a few more names.
All right. Right above Jaden Daniels, we have Dak Prescott.
Yeah, I think Dak's better than Jalen Hurts.
Yeah,
I think so. I think the last two were really close. I think at the beginning of this year, I would have said Jaden Daniels over Jalen Hurts, probably. But I don't – like, Jaden Daniels has been playing great this year and then obviously got hurt. But, yeah, I do think Jalen Hurts is, like, I think a little bit overhated, to be honest. I don't think he's, like, the best quarterback ever, but I do think a lot of people kind of like to play up their dislike for him because the Eagles are so good.
I do agree with that.
But that being said, I do think Dak is also a pretty underrated quarterback. He can really lead, like, a pretty successful offense, and he's done that most of his career, so –
Dak is arguably a top five quarterback in the
this
league
year. This year, not in like
would
in general.
I say just in general.
No, man.
No, I don't know about that.
Not
right behind
time,
Bo Nix at
like,
four.
Of,
huh?
Of the active quarterbacks in the league right now, I would take him top five.
Right now, yes. He's played like a top five quarterback this year, yes.
Top five?
Yeah.
Top
five, yeah. He slowed down. Like the last couple games haven't been good, but he was stellar those like first like 7 to 8 weeks. Yeah, I know the Jalen Hurts segment, we were trying to get some strong opinions. We have two Jalen Hurts appreciators here, so I don't know if we necessarily accomplished what we wanted. I wonder if we'd gotten some different fans on the mics for this game, if the answers would have been different.
Yeah, I guess We'll see maybe next time, but that's the end of the Jalen game. You know, a sport I couldn't find any Jalens in is hockey, which is coming up next.
All right. Well, thank you, MJ. We may not have any Jalens in hockey, but we do have someone named Nathan MacKinnon. So what I want to start with is talking about the Avs, the number one team in the league. We got a huge Avs fan, Neil, here. So, Neil, how are we feeling about our Avs this season?
Yeah, the Avs are on a killer. I mean, our GM, Chris McFarland, the Howie Roseman of the NHL, just making some great moves. I mean, we have good depth. We extended Nechas, and we're seeing great play out of our recently extended rookie Gavin Brindley. Landeskog is back scoring goals. Our goalies are good. And obviously, like, Nathan MacKinnon, he's the best player in the league. He leads the league in points.
Whoa.
33
Whoa.
Points by six points. He's above Connor McDavid by
Show
six
some
points
respect.
Right
above Connor, who?
Above Connor
Show
McDavid.
Some respect. As a Canucks wow. fan, Connor McDavid is by far the best player in the NHL.
I mean, honestly,
it's not been close for a while.
How many cups do we see from McDavid right now?
Look, I love – bro, I am the one guy preying on McDavid's downfall every year, I mm-hmm. promise you. Yeah. But he is the best player in the league. You got to admit it. He just is. Anyways, continue with your take.
I'm just saying the Avs are looking really good, and they should be poised to hopefully beat the Dallas Stars finally in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, but. I don't know about that one. We have taken all out a couple years in a row, and I think we're going to keep going on that train, personally.
Only for the Oilers to knock you all out.
No. We
right.
can't have that again.
How that's the circle of life out
if
in the Western Conference.
If it happens 4 years in a row, like, I don't even know what I'm going to do
Y'all can
anymore.
Be the Bills of the NHL. It's
oh
perfect. Yeah. It's,
well,
it's.
If the Bills or if the Stars are the Bills of the NHL, then we know Edmonton are the 49ers of the NHL because, I mean, their cup window looks like it's over. Like, what's going on with Edmonton right now?
I will say the Oilers have this, like, funny habit of just starting the year very poorly. Like, and it seems like they've done that the last couple of years. I remember when – guys, I promise I know more puck than just the Canucks, but bear with me. When we were – when we had that really, like, hot start to the year and ended up, like, being the first in the Pacific – I remember the Oilers starting like very poorly. That we started that year beating them 8-1 in the first game, and then the Oilers obviously ended up being the 2 seed, I believe, and then knocked us out in the second round. So I don't necessarily worry for the Oilers too much, only because I've seen this story before. Like, McDavid and Draisaitl usually lock in at around midseason and just go on a tear, because they're like two of the top five players in the league, right? Now the goaltending's always going to be an issue. Or a worry, rather, with Skinner and Pickard, because it seems like Skinner's always being benched, you know, for Pickard in the important games, and then, right, you're relying on a backup goalie to get your results in the playoffs. But I don't know. I see what you're saying, and I think Oilers fans themselves are even a little sick of the whole, like, starting off slow thing, but I'm not
Shout
too worried
to
about
my
the Oilers.
Uncle, an Oilers fan, but, I mean, like...
Really?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, but, I mean... They're losing most of their games by a goal, except for the Avs, which got absolutely blown out in that game.
Yeah, that was crazy.
But, I mean, if they can turn it around, get rid of those silly mistakes, like you said, the goalies, I still don't understand why they haven't made any goalie changes yet.
Dude, I mean, it's ridiculous. Both Stuart Skinner has a save percentage of 889 right now, and Calvin Pickard has a save percentage of 830 right now.
830? No
it's
way!
It's just the same story but a different year. Like, I'm not worried about them missing the playoffs. They're going to make the playoffs. They're probably going to win a series or two, but I just don't know if they're going to have what it takes to beat a team with actual depth like Florida the past 2 years.
I mean, McDavid believes in the team. He signed a 2-year, $12.5 million contract extension over the summer. Compare that to Kirill Kaprizov, who is nowhere near McDavid talent, who signed for $17 million AAV. So McDavid is giving the Oilers 2 years to try and win that cup on that player-friendly contract. Yet
it will not happen.
They still don't have different goalies.
Yeah.
And honestly, he's carrying them. He's second in the league in points with 27 points, but... really nothing to show for it. Like,
yeah.
They're middle of the pack right now, and honestly, do we think this is a sustainable model? At the end of the day, it's a team, not a one-man show, and it's going to be the same situation like we saw last year with them losing because McDavid can't carry an entire team.
Yeah, we've sort of seen the Oilers do the strategy of, like, rotate the role players, like, every year, mm-hmm. and they somehow, like, manage to overachieve, right?
Yeah.
And I agree that it's one of those things where, like, as a rival fan, I find myself watching the playoffs and thinking, how do they keep doing it? Like, not nobody's, you know, by any means, but these guys who maybe haven't
had the opportunities on other teams, come to the Oilers, and then just start like scoring. Like Vasily Podkolzin found himself on the second line for the Oilers, having been like a healthy scratch for the Canucks, and we're the Canucks, bro. Like, so I don't think it's sustainable, just because I think eventually like McDavid and Draisaitl will probably just be like, okay, is our team serious? And I just want to point something out. So the Red Wings, who are doing pretty decent in the East right now, they acquired John Gibson, the stud former Ducks goaltender this offseason, mm-hmm. for a second-round pick next year, this year's fourth-round pick, and Peter Mrazek. So you're saying the Edmonton Oilers couldn't afford John Gibson, who at his best is one of the best goaltenders in the league. It is, like, it does bring about that question of, like, why haven't they made the move? And they've been too married to the idea of having Skinner as their guy. So, honestly, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, just, like, look at what the Avs did last season with their new goalie tandem, Blackwood and Wedgewood, two solid pieces who've only grown over time. Like, the Oilers really need to focus in on the trade deadline and start thinking about different goalies.
Yeah, do we think – so we've talked about the Avs and the Oilers. Who do we think are the other contenders in the West? I mean, the Ducks – have had quite the start, right?
Yeah.
They had a bit of a – they hired the very, like, controversial Joel Quenneville.
Oh, yes.
You know, I don't know how much we're allowed to cover that on this podcast, but if you would like to – if you do not know about Joel Quenneville and his stint with the Blackhawks, do listeners care to search that up on your own time? But point is, it was a bit of a controversial hire that – Ducks fans and NHL fans league-wide were not very happy with. But, I mean, hey, they are currently first in the Pacific. They've had a couple of losses back-to-back now, but Leo Carlson has had a very good start to the year. It seems like that young core is really stepping up.
Yeah.
And some of the guys that they've gotten, like Jacob Trouba, have really like stepped up when these guys were basically outcasts for the Rangers.
I mean, just talking about Leo Carlson, let's take a look at the young Bucks of the league, right? We grew up, you know, watching Crosby and Ovi. Now it's McDavid and McKinnon. And in the future, we're going to see it's going to be Bedard, Celebrini, and Carlson. I mean, these three young players are all tied in third in the league for points at 26 points. They're honestly, like, they're dragging their very, you know, poverty franchises out of the dumps. Anaheim, like you said, is fourth in the league. And what we're seeing, Chicago finally has a fighting chance that we haven't seen in, you know, a couple of years. And same thing with San Jose. Just, like, they're really bringing that spark back into their franchise.
Yeah. Have y'all seen, like, and again, I haven't had the chance to watch too many NHL games, especially, like, non-Canucks ones. But on Instagram, I will just see, like, the highlights of Bedard or Celebrini. Those, like, hockey rinks are filled to the brim again. Like, Chicago is loving hockey again.
Mm-hmm.
Like that Bedard goal against MJ's Devils, actually, the crazy one. Like, Chicago just, like, exploded when he scored that. Celebrini and Will Smith are, like you said, providing that spark for San Jose. And, I mean, whoever thought, like, Anaheim. Like, you know, it's been a while since the Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff days, right?
Yeah.
But who knew that it would, you know, how long it was going to be before Anaheim started enjoying hockey again, man.
Yeah, but what I will say about Anaheim is maybe we can cool it a little bit because – I mean, obviously they're led by Joel Quenneville, horrible person, great coach. He's gotten a lot out of those young players. Leo Carlson, as mentioned, Carter Gauthier is above a point per game right now. And they also have guys like Beckett Sinecki and Mason McTavish. They have forwards that were like all drafted like in the top three picks, so they have the talent there, especially to score. But a stat that I saw recently, I don't know if this is accurate to today, but it was as of like a week ago at least. They give up the most high-danger chances in the league, and they also produce the most high-danger chances in the league. So I just don't think that type of defensive structure is going to be sustainable for a full season. And if they do, like, sneak into the playoffs, definitely not in the playoffs.
Yeah, it definitely seems like one of those teams that could be a year away. And, it, like, mm-hmm. if they get a couple good pieces at the trade deadline or, like, in the offseason, they could be really scary with that young core. We've talked a lot about the West. Just a couple shout-outs to Utah, who have also had a brilliant start to the year. The Kings have sort of come back from a poor start. Vancouver Canucks, all of our guys are injured. Quinn Hughes, please don't leave. But let's cover the East very briefly. The Montreal Canadiens have had the best start they've had in a while, to my dismay, sadly. And the New Jersey Devils, you know, finally, mm-hmm. you know, performing up to expectations, it feels like. The Hurricanes are right up there. What do we think about the East so far?
I mean, honestly, no major surprises other than, you know, Montreal. But, like, New Jersey, we expected them to grow a lot this year, and they did. They're finally performing up to expectations. Carolina's always up there in the mix, but they're inevitably going to lose to someone else in the conference finals. So,
probably to the Panthers, you know, if they make it, right?
If they're swept, too.
Yeah, if they can make it back from all their injuries, but, yeah.
Yeah, we look at, I mean, Toronto and Washington from last year, man, like, what's going on there? Like, obviously, Washington, you know, the storyline is, like, last year was Ovi and, you know, passing Gretzky. But yeah. I think right now he has 4 goals in 17 games. He's older, right? But, like, if he's going to be one of your top scorers, you would want him to produce a little bit more. But, obviously, hard to ask a 40-year-old to do that. So, you know, it seems like in Washington it's not really working there as it was last year. You know, nearly won the President's Trophy, and it seems like teams that go on that unexpected run a certain year, the year after, they usually fall off a little bit. Again, I can speak from experience from my Vancouver Canucks.
Let's just talk a little bit about the Maple Leafs, who are the Dallas Cowboys of the NHL.
True.
Traded away one of their top players in Marner, not doing as well, just a complete mess all around, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're done. Like, Matthews isn't as good as he used to be. Marner's gone. Their depth isn't better. Their goalie's still – they're like the Oilers, but just their top players are worse, basically.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they won, what, 2 playoff series in this era? It's kind of sad, honestly.
Yeah.
But I just think – I don't know. I think they need to look inwards a bit.
Yeah, you would have hoped Berube could have gotten more out of those guys, especially being a Stanley Cup-winning coach with the Blues. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, Toronto's going to have to go a long way to figure it out. But, yeah, do we have very quickly, just quick fire, any early Stanley Cup picks before we move on to our next segment?
I mean, obviously, give me the Avs. They're doing right. So well this year. I feel like they got it in them, though.
Give me the Hurricanes, man. Maybe they'll break through eventually. This is the year.
Interesting. Give me the Dallas Stars. I think
Thank you.
They'll pull through, I think, at some point. They've got the pieces there, I think.
Hey, I'm right behind you. I was just about to say, how can I say anyone besides my Dallas Stars? Like, they had a little bit of a slow start, but they are really heating up right now. We are on a, I believe, 4-game win streak. And so, you know, we're just going to keep that motion going, and I think we could be some real contenders.
Yeah, hopefully if they keep winning, we can get some more quick hits on the Dallas Stars going forward on the podcast. As we move on to our next segment, we're going to shift over from pro sports over back to Rice sports. We're going to talk a little bit of Rice volleyball.
Thank you, Julian. We are going to talk some Rice volleyball. The Rice volleyball team is fresh off a 3-0 sweep against FAU at home on senior night. They moved to 17-8, 13-1 in conference play and add to a 13-game win streak with that win last Sunday. They only have 2 regular season games coming up. They're both on the road. They're at Wichita State on Friday at 6 p.m., which will be concluded by the time you listen to this episode, and then they are at North Texas in the season finale on Sunday at 1 p.m. Next Friday, the 21st, they will start AAC conference tournament play, I believe, as the number one overall seed. Our in-house volleyball expert, Rachel, is nodding. Speaking of, I am joined by volleyball experts Rachel and potentially MJ to go give you a breakdown on what might be Rice's most successful sport so far this year. Rachel, our next game coming up is Wichita State tonight. Tell us what went down last time and what the win streak could mean. How could it be looking tonight?
All right, so, yeah, last time we played Wichita State, we did win that game. We won it 3-2. It was a very, very competitive game, and I personally don't think we played that game as well as we should have. We did win in 5 sets, but each set was within 5 points or less. It was a very close game, and I genuinely don't think that Wichita State can – you know, necessarily compete with us in that level, or that they should be competing with us at that level. So I'm really hoping that this 13-game win streak is putting a fire under our butts and we have some really good momentum going into this game tonight. And hopefully we can get a win tonight, maybe even a sweep or just a more definitive win than we got last time, which is what I'm hoping to see tonight.
Do you think that there's any chance for the win streak to fall before the end of the regular season, given that, you know, we've been hot for a while? Wichita State has given us trouble in the past. I don't know about North Texas. You might be able to fill in the listeners on that. But both games are on the road. Maybe we haven't been tested as much recently. I know we've kind of been sweeping a lot of teams. Is there any concern for complacency amongst the Rice Owl faithful?
You know, If we were to lose this game, I would be, one, surprised, and two, obviously very disappointed. I think that this win is really important to keep this energy going into the conference tournament. I think getting a loss in this time to either team, whether it be Wichita State or North Texas, I think if we're to lose either of these games, that's going to be a huge hit on our confidence and our momentum going into the conference tournament. So honestly, I don't expect us to lose either of these games. But if we do, that would be definitely a big hit for us.
Tragic for the program.
Let's not put that energy into the world. We are going to win both of these games.
All right, speaking of good energy, let's go through a few of the players who have been fueling the great energy we've seen all season, especially in these past 13 games that we have won. Let's start with Taylor Preston, who transferred from Michigan State and has been an absolutely huge addition. She's averaging 12.46 attacks per set, which ranks 7th in the nation and is 3rd in the conference in kills per set. Do you want to talk the listeners through what those stats mean, for one, since volleyball is a little less of a well-known sport, and also give your flowers to perhaps Rice's most impactful transfer?
Yeah, so for anyone who's listening who maybe doesn't know how volleyball works or isn't a volleyball fan, attacks is basically when someone is basically attempting to score. It's those, like, when they jump and they, like, hit it really hard. And then a kill is when they're actually successful at doing that, when they get a point off of an attack. So obviously Taylor is attacking very, very often, which is great. That means we're setting the ball up for her to be able to have those opportunities. And her getting those kills almost half the time is really great because, you know, we're getting her the ball and she's able to score and capitalize on those opportunities. Adding Taylor this season has just been a huge addition, and we are so grateful to have her. And we hope she's, you know, had a great time with us. And yeah, obviously just a huge addition to this team. So thank you, Taylor Preston. We love you over here. Keep doing your thing. You're just going to do great in the conference tournament. So, yeah, shout out Taylor Preston.
All right, speaking of the assists and the help that we've been getting her, I'm actually going to jump down and get your thoughts on Savannah Scopal and then Kaya Mate, who has been filling in since the devastating injury. What is that situation looking like, and how have both of those Owls helped players like Preston and LaDamie be able to get those kills and score those points for the Owls?
Yeah, so Savannah Scopal was our starting setter at the beginning of the season. She is a phenomenal setter. She's a sophomore, so she's still pretty young. And in this first half of the season, she really set us up for success to start out early. She had a total of 315 assists through the first half of the season. Her season high of 55 assists came against Temple. Unfortunately, she did get injured on September 28th against Tulsa, and that took her out for almost the rest of the season. She is cleared to play now. She might see the court in one of these next two games. She has not seen the court yet, although she has been cleared for the past two games, I believe. So I am curious to see if Savannah makes a comeback to the court in this regular season, although I do fully expect to see her playing in the conference tournament. So really happy to see that Savannah is recovering, and hopefully we'll see her back on the court soon. But in the meantime, while she has been injured, we've really seen a step up from Miss Kaya Mateo. She has just been doing an amazing job. She got American Conference Setter of the Week 3 times in a row, and she was averaging 9.3 assists per game before Savannah was injured, but now is averaging 37 assists per game with a season high of 57 assists against our Wichita State in the previous time. So love seeing Kaya do her thing. She really gained a lot of confidence, a lot of playing time, and just huge success in that absence of Savannah. So huge shout out to both of these setters. They are both a huge part of our team, and can't wait to see them be able to play together in that conference tournament.
Thank you. That is excellent. I know, like, as someone who doesn't know a ton about volleyball, the idea of 55 assists in a game just conceptually is off the charts bonkers. So I can kind of imagine how that might happen in a volleyball game, but still insane production from the Owls on the court there. Rachel, any final thoughts in our last minute or so about Owl volleyball you want to give the people?
hey, I mean, we have a bunch of huge pieces on this team. Obviously, I wasn't able to shout out everyone, but I'm really excited to see what we can do in this conference tournament. We are going to be the number one seed, so hopefully we can really capitalize on that and find some success there. So really excited to see what we're going to do in the conference tournament. Very proud of the season that we've had. I'm very fortunate to have been able to watch them. So huge shout out our volleyball team. Love them. Can't wait to see what y'all are going to do.
Thank you. That will do it. Shout out the volleyball team indeed. If you don't watch a lot of volleyball like myself, I would encourage you to get involved for the NCAA tournament or some of the conference tournaments. Like, I know I may not know what all the stats mean per se, but it is a really impressive sport in terms of athleticism and speed, and watching the tournament, which is largely televised on ESPN networks, is a little more accessible than volleyball might otherwise be. It is, if you're a sports fan, you're going to love it, and it's a chance to cheer on your Rice Owls, as always, and we love to see some Owl success. We want to give them our flowers. So we're now going to move on to, God forbid, multiple poems in our rice cooker segment. So Jacob, why don't you wash the starch off our rice and get us started?
Thank you, Ian. And by now, it feels like a K-True tradition to continue with my wonderful haiku poems. However, to my dismay, the Dodgers season is now over, and it's time to move on to other sports. Ergo, here come the Rams after spanking the 49ers on national TV. Here's my haiku of the week to commemorate this win. Stafford and Nacua, all we need to bring the chip, the true Western champions. The Rams will put to the test as they face the Seahawks this week at SoFi Stadium. This matchup will feed families, as these two could well be Super Bowl contenders. Hashtag never forget Cooper Kupp. You'll always be in my heart, bud.
Wow, exceptional as always, Jacob. But I bring even better news. Nico Harrison has been fired. Evil has been vanquished from Dallas. All praise to the new Dallas Mavericks. Nico has been brought to justice, but now he's out on the streets, so who knows what he'll be able to do. You know, as much as I can revel in Nico being let go, it just makes me sad knowing that it won't bring back Luka. Right now, the Mavs are 3-9, having lost back-to-back games. This guy wanted to talk all about defense win championships, rah, rah, rah. Well, guess what? We're the fourth best defense in the league and dead last in the conference. You know why that is? Because it doesn't matter how good the defense is if it's made of goddamn glass. Everybody's out. AD, Kyrie, they're sitting lively in PJ Washington for night. I'm waiting on Caleb Martin to be found dead in a ditch. So the only Maverick I know will be there is Chief of Mavericks Decisions, Dwight Powell. And going back to Caleb Martin, that's another thing. He not only traded away Luka Doncic, the heart and soul of this team, but also we lost our baby boy, Quentin Grimes, for this so-called basketball player who has not done anything. Maybe Nico's master plan was to have us lose this year too and have the rats devour the rest of this Mavs roster. The Dumonts have one shot, so they don't mess up this GM role again, and I would like to formally pitch myself as a future general manager of the Dallas Mavericks. Please, Patrick Dumont, if you could contact me at the K-True Sports Gmail or personally through my phone number. Thank you.
I decided that I wanted to steal Jacob's format for my quick hit. I'm going to give y'all a little bit of a poem. You might see him in uniform, or maybe not at all, but know he will be there when he gets the call. No talk of guts and glory. More like protect and serve, a symbol of devotion and respect that they deserve. These are everyday heroes, this general and his receivers in blue. And don't forget, Woody Marks, he's a hero too. Know that if you need them, a hero will be near to help you in the darkest times and take away the fear. Ladies and gentlemen, grab a beer. From the ashes rising at the break of day, I'm so very proud to say, our very own General Mills is here. And from that, we will transition over to... That was a bit of an awkward transition. We will go over to predictions to close off our show. As the common listener knows, we have three matchups that we predict at the end of each episode. And we go around the table sharing who we have chosen for these matchups. So... first one up, we have UH at Auburn men's basketball Sunday at 2 p.m. on ESPN. I'll start with Fox. Who do you got in this matchup?
I'm going with the number one team in the country, the Houston Cougars.
Give me UH.
Give me the Cougars.
Wow, give me the Cougars.
Shout out to Hod Pettifer, New Jersey native, but I gotta go UH.
Yeah, I got UH.
Yeah, I have UH too.
Andrew, switch your answer back to Auburn. I saw that, you little cheeky.
I changed before the show. That's still valid.
Okay, let's get a replay on that VAR a little bit. But I'll take the Houston Cougars.
I'm also taking the Cougs.
I am also taking the Cougs. I don't trust Auburn without Bruce Pearl. Wow, I thought someone was going to take Auburn. That was not as interesting as I thought. But Julian, what do we got next?
I'm so glad we chose this as one of our matchups. Anyways, moving on to the next one, we've got Seahawks at Rams. Huge NFC and NFC West matchup on Fox in the late afternoon slot. Fox, who do you've got in this matchup?
I'm going to go Rams, really just because they're at home.
I'm going to go Seahawks. I love JSN.
It's going to be the Seahawks. The Rams are not making it out of the first round of the playoffs, let's be real.
Give me the Rams. RIP Max Pacioretty.
Might be an MVP moment for Stafford here. Give me the Rams.
Give me the Rams and Unc Stafford.
Rams.
Future MVP Matt Stafford will lead my Rams to victory.
Hey, I'm actually going to take the Seahawks here.
I trust the Rams at home. I think these teams are evenly matched, so the season split seems plausible to me. So I'll take the Rams.
And finally, we've got a huge college football matchup between number 10 Texas at number 5 Georgia. Max Pacioretty's Bulldogs on Saturday evening. I will give it to Fox to close out the episode.
As a UT fan, we're never winning a big game. Give me Georgia.
Give me Georgia.
Go Dogs. Go Dogs. Insert the Pat McAfee clip. I don't know the whole thing.
What's that coming down the track?
What's that coming down?
Give me Georgia.
I gotta be different. Give me UT.
Give me the red and black. Go Dogs.
Yeah, give me them Dogs.
Go Dogs.
How could I say I'm from Austin, Texas if I don't root for my Horns? Hook 'em, baby. Give me Texas.
Sick 'em.
Sick 'em, hook 'em, whatever you want. That is the end of our episode. Once again, I do not have the closing thing in front of me, so just be sure to find us on all platforms, including Spotify, on the K-True Radio. Feel free to email us at ktruesports@gmail.com if you've got an inquiry or you just want to, you know, make a friend, or however many people in the studio are worth the friends. We're going to be back next week with another thrilling episode. And yeah, guys, have a great weekend.